Welcome back to Soccer Card United. It's episode 219 of the greatest soccer card podcast in the world. My name is Jason. That is Enzo. Hello, Enzo.
Hello, Jason.
We have a Q&A show today.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
But first, I'm going to go a bit unorthodox here because usually on a Q&A show, we just do the Q&A, but I have to just take a quick look at the pristine checklist.
Okay.
So, Road to the Euro 2024 pristine is out tomorrow.
Okay, Friday.
And it's been whip breakers for a couple of days.
Yeah, we've seen boxes, we've seen checklists, we've seen all sorts.
Yeah, so I'm getting my checklist here from Pat's Pulls.
Yeah. That's where you get your checklist from.
Not always, but you know, I don't always get checklists, but when I do, I use Pat's Pulls. Right. There's a few different things to go on. The base cards are much of muchness, you know, debutante. For an Ireland supporter like me, I believe Chidozie Ogbene is in here. Yeah, there he is. It's a big one. He wasn't in
finest.
Let's see who else is in here. Mamardashvili, Tatashvili for Georgia, Iceland, Scotland. Were Scotland in finest? I don't know if they were.
I think they were. Wales. Andy Robertson. Wales weren't.
So Wales are in. Wales are in this one. Luke Shaw for England. Mason Mount for England. Anyway, I'll crack on to the good stuff.
Okay.
Pristine borders. We saw that's kind of like the, what do they call that in the other sets? National something. Fresh faces. Where's the autographs? Here we go. Right. So autographs. Marvelous Moments autograph checklist goes like this. Fernando Torres, Marco Van Basten, Pedri, Peter Schmeichel, and Renato Sanchez.
Okay, interesting. That there's
interesting.
Yeah, like I wasn't expecting Pedri in there. I was expecting just more legacy stuff. But obviously, there's been some marvelous moments for some of those players as well, Jason.
Yeah, and certainly Marco Van Basten. We were talking about Jude potentially winning the Ballon d'Or, but having a short career. Marco Van Basten won 3 Ballon d'Or and retired at the age of 28 or 29 or whatever he was.
There you go. Could be a bit of Jude.
Could be a bit of Jude, yeah. Pristine prodigies, Evan Ferguson, Jamal Musiala, Nico Williams, Oscar Glock, Randall Colomwani, and Wilfred Nonto there for Italy.
I don't hate that.
Yeah. Then a big old checklist of I guess base autographs. Everyone from Dennis Zakaria to Ian Wright to James McFadden to Marco Verratti. Interesting. But a slight disappointment then. So you were telling me before we went on that the patch autos haven't really come through in the way we were hoping.
No, the National Crest patch auto, which they have in there, they promoted it with Bruno Fernandes and the Portuguese crest. But unfortunately, it seems like, based on Pat Bull's checklist, it seems like there's only two players in that checklist.
Yeah, Bruno and Memphis.
And then, yeah, the one above that is Bruno Memphis as well, isn't it? So I don't know if like Topps just had a one-on-one or they had some form of interaction with Bruno and Memphis that they were able to get this done. But like they might be game used or whatever, and they might, you know, might be tougher to get it. But definitely disappointing selection, I would say.
Yes. Obviously, it might be that if it's a patch, you can't use the patch unless you have the license for the country.
Makes sense.
So then they might have just thought that they, you know, when you look at, take away the top tier nations, they don't have the license for it. And they go, all right, so Portugal, Netherlands.
And that's where, but they got like, Jason, imagine they had an Ireland one there. Would you not be delighted?
I would be delighted. I'm saying I think they've thought, what's the point in doing an Ireland one there?
That doesn't make sense. Like I'd say if you had a Gareth Bale, Wales, whatever the case may be.
No, I know. I'm just saying it's just, it speaks to it. I mean, one thing, people always laugh at like Panini and all the stuff they've made throughout the years. But like, we've seen their card shows and all this stuff. Like, if you are a fan of pretty much any country, Panini have made a amazing patch autograph, one of one or something, of your country at some point. Because they, on the one hand, don't know what they're doing. On the other hand, because they don't know what they're doing,
they get it right.
They're a bit of everything for everybody.
There you go. They have a wider net. Like, I don't know. Something here just feels like they had something with Bruno. Because even if it's a country thing, why is Ronaldo not there with a patch out or whatever? Or, you know, a country patch out or whatever that checklist is. But, yeah, I don't know. It feels like they might just kind of, that's what they had and they went with it. But I do think, you know, you can't have both of those two things just with Bruno and Memphis. It's a bit strange.
It is slightly strange. Hang on a second.
Is it fair to say this might be inaccurate?
I don't know where Pat.
That's what I'm saying. This is an Excel checklist from Pat Pulse. I know he has the box and he has connections and all that. I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm just saying you never know.
Okay.
It seems off just to have two. Come on.
But there are other autograph relics. I'm just reading here in the popular demand autograph relic checklist. So we get Bruno. We get Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
But we also get Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, very nice.
John Barnes for England, David Seaman for England, and Cristiano Ronaldo for Portugal.
Oh, look at that.
So they're the popular demand. I don't know what they quite look like. See if I can find it.
I think the one that they were promoting Ronaldo with might have been one of them. You know, the yellow and black patch and the autograph.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think it might be. I mean, it makes sense if he's not on the other checklist. But yeah, I don't know. Obviously, again, similar to Finest and similar to the sticker album, this is kind of a first at bat for Topps. I know that they've done the sticker albums before, Jason. Oh, there you go. So that's the jumbo relic kind of, like, that's the thing they only have Bruno and Yokov on the right.
Bruno, Memphis, and then these popular demand ones include Ronaldo and John Barnes and David Seaman and a couple others.
Yeah, so like, but what I'm trying to say is, like, with the sticker album, I know it's not technically a first back because they've bought Merlin, they've done so many stickers back in the past, but in terms of like the modern age, let's say post 2020, this mm-hmm. does seem like a first at bat for them. And same with Finest and now with Pristine as a first at bat with Topps doing national licenses for soccer. But it does look like, again, as what Annie said, it's like, how do you not have an autograph relic of every country represented? It doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, like, it might be hard to get that, but like, if we start seeing this open and it says not associated and this has nothing to do with nothing, but here it is, then it's just like, hold on, at what point
you couldn't go onto Amazon and buy a shirt.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how is there not one represented for every nation? It just doesn't make sense, because you have to realize if you're trying to tailor to collectors, then for a national release, you're not just trying to pick out the Haalands and the fire and fire emojis.
Yes.
You're trying to actually just appease each country with a nice collection of their countrymen in their countrymen kits. Having a good time. So I don't know. For me, Italy being unlicensed kind of removes me from it a lot, though. I'm not really paying too much attention just in terms of collectability.
Because you're not going to be collecting these cards anyway.
Not a chance, no. But yeah, I don't know. For me, the jumbo, I got excited about the Bruno jumbo. I didn't realize that was 50% of the total jumbo relic checklist, potentially. I refuse to believe that's an official checklist until I see an official checklist. Although I'm sure it is.
Okay.
Their judgment tells me it is, but I refuse to believe it.
Well, I mean, let's take that point and say, why is there no official checklist out?
If other people have it. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
There either is a checklist or there isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very fair.
Speaking of not collecting Italy cards, did you see Nicolò Fagioli and Sandro Tonali both have cards in this, who are both, of course, currently serving gambling bans?
I do. I'm going to put that down to them preparing the set in advance, you know,
of the gambling ban.
I would say so.
Mm.
Must be.
There are dual autographs. Paul Ince and Tony Adams for England, the Laudrup brothers for Denmark.
Okay.
There is a couple of existing Brian and Michael Laudrup dual autograph cards out there, but there are always Danish fans looking for them. So, yeah. Haaland and Cristiano for Norway and Portugal.
Yeah, okay. That was in Finest as well, was it?
Yeah, it might have been, yeah. I think that's probably, as they view it, the best card they could possibly make with the current licensing.
But again, isn't that somewhat flawed?
Yeah, it is flawed thinking. It misunderstands why people collect national team kits or national team cards. Totti and Inzaghi for Italy, but as you say, unlicensed, so who cares?
Yeah, that's a great duel if it was licensed. But again, they can't do anything about that.
And then Roy Keane and Micah Richards.
I don't hate it. Bit of punditry banter there.
Yeah.
there's a Man City. I mean, there's a Man City, Man United element to it as well. That's a much lesser extent, but
yeah.
The punditry banter, I don't hate that. Come on, do you hate it?
I don't hate it. I do think it's
time and a place kind of thing.
Yeah,
that'd be a better Alan and Ginter dual auto.
Yeah, I do think it's slightly disrespectful.
Oh, to Roy Keane.
You know, like Roy Keane, like, oh yeah, Roy Keane. He's your man off Sky Sports. Always talk to Micah Richards, isn't he? You know what I mean?
Oh my goodness! Listen, in fairness, you're an Irish collector, so I can. You're saying basically, Roy Keane is featured in an Ireland kit with an autograph here, and you have to look at an eyesore and Micah Richards on the same card. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you've put Ireland and England on the same card.
And England's not even licensed. Why would you do that?
Yeah, and even if they were licensed.
No.
I don't know. I haven't read your history books, but I don't want England anywhere near us. Like,
yeah, you're not collecting that, basically.
I'm not collecting that. I'm not buying an English
card. For me, that's Alan and Ginter. Because you're removing... It's Alan and Ginter because I think the United-City rivalry is too big to put it on a dual autograph. And I think the Ireland-England rivalry is also too big to put on a dual autograph. So that's Alan and Ginter in your suits.
Yeah. In your suit. Happy as Larry. I might even buy that. That's brilliant. Fun.
Then it's fun. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't hate it, but I understand the...
Why it might frustrate some people.
Yeah. Especially when you see it. And like the Ireland kit's going to look glorious. And they'll be next to even a pure white
or a blue
pure
t-shirt. Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the procedure.
Wait, what if they surprise you and they're in suits? Think there's a chance? No.
I mean, there's a chance they're in suits, but I don't think they would be.
Right.
But I think in general, as you say, look, Tops are just getting into this.
First app, I'm calling this a first app.
Right, but then do you think that's excusable? Because it's not like you can't access the
information. No, I know. I'm saying... I don't know. I feel like the UEFA Champions League products have improved so much in the last couple of years that I do think that... I wouldn't say an excuse, but I'm saying you could argue they got it wrong. And I'm saying I think they will amend that and they'll fix that. But yeah, I understand. It feels like I could almost picture being inside the meetings that they're making these product design decisions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Richards, Roy Keane, because they're, again, the Ronaldo-Haaland thing, you're dead right in saying... They're going, what's the best dual autograph we can make in terms of the best caliber of player, potentially? Yeah. And I understand how they end up with Ronaldo Haaland. They don't have Messi in this license. They don't have Neymar, whatever. But not great. Because like I get it. But at the same time, especially because Haaland has not done anything with Norway at a senior level, it's also disrespectful to Cristiano Ronaldo to put him...
Completely. Yeah.
So is there dual autographs where they're at the same nation?
There's the English one and the Italian one.
But like, there should be so much more of same nation dual autographs.
I know. It's mental.
What's that? Like, that's like, I remember the amount of times I've seen like a Ronaldo Figo autograph that Panini did in like Immaculate or whatever back in the day. And it's all, they always look cool. And it makes sense as well. Ronaldo Figo.
Or Bruno Cristiano.
Yeah. Ronaldo Leao, I wouldn't even hate. As much as I hate Leao at the moment, because it's still like fun. They were fun, flary wingers in their youth. They're good players, whatever. They're a good player. Ronaldo's a good player.
Yeah. It's a good player, not a great player.
Yeah, but for me, like, to be honest, like, if you had a
Michael Laudrup.
Yeah, brilliant, wonderful. But what I feel like, but there's the problem right there. I feel like they went, they're brothers. It wasn't like, they're both Danish, you know, top quality players. Yeah. But,
Put De Bruyne and Lukaku on the same card.
Even, I think they're, are they on license? No, they're licensed, are they?
No, they're licensed.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. 100% do that. But like, what I'm saying is, like for Ireland, I assume there's no dual Ireland autograph.
No, because they've used Roy Keane's jewel to put him with Micah Richards.
That's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
But look. First at bat, it's also a road two, so I feel like they get a bit of a bit of leeway there.
It's just a road two.
Yeah, like, so long as Eurochrome or whatever else comes out for the Euros is looking well, and maybe, you know, it's like, you don't get the Ireland dual autograph you want, Jason, because it's going to be a Chase and Chrome, then it's forgivable, I think.
Yeah. But maybe so, but then you'd expect, I mean, like...
There's a variety of combinations, and they definitely could have got more off in Pristine, and it doesn't really make sense that they didn't.
I suppose I just expected Pristine when we kind of, you hear of a new brand... and we were talking about it first announced. It was like, ooh, this is like so many hits per box and everything is brilliant. Just crash back down to earth.
You cannot release a product like this without, I think, dual and triple autos galore. Because like, what that's the, I think even Liverpool lineage back in the day, like that was a similar setup in terms of three encased autographs, that kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
But there was the chase of the, you know, the Nunez, Suarez, Giulotto and stuff like that. Like you got excited about that chase, but it, like it does feel like based on this questionable checklist, and it is questionable, this questionable checklist that we've seen is like, why are you not making double autographs and triple autographs and making them super short print and having a bit of fun with it?
Mm-hmm.
Like where, it, why, you know, like the Panini, and I'm sure they hate even hearing about Panini, but you know, like the Panini quad autos that they had in like 2018, Donruss or whatever, whatever Donruss that was.
Yeah,
that was unreal. And I remember the Italian one I talk about, and someone that listens to the show has one. But it's like they did Buffon, Cannavaro, Pirlo, and Totti or Del Piero. It's like you start at the goalkeeper, defender, the midfielder, spine, attacker.
Spine, yeah,
a spine. Why not have spine quad autos and make them super? Like that's one problem I feel like Topps does have. They made that, like Panini made that quad auto, and I'm pretty sure it's literally like to 15 and to 10 and to 1. Like you just don't, you never see them.
Yes,
but it's like I feel like Topps would do it, and it's to 99. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like you almost got it. Just make super short print, cool, rare chase cards with this license. Give me an Ireland spine. I'm sure you would be looking everywhere for it.
I would, yeah.
Bad as a spine as it might be, but you'd be into it.
Well, it wouldn't be a bad spine, but that's fine. Because the whole idea is for people who are from the country, that's what Topps I don't think are getting here, is that you don't consider your own players to be bad. You only consider other countries' players to be bad.
You will
the relationship you have with your own players is different to the relationship you have with the players of the club you support.
No person that's collecting nationally, actually very few, there's definitely some out there, and I'll get into that in a second. There's a very, very small base of actual collectors that are like going, I need a Portugal kit Ronaldo on a Jewel autograph with a Haaland Norway kit. Unless your father and mother are of each of those nations, then you're buzzing. Like, if you get me, like, a Roy Keane, and they've actually done this, I think, a Roy Keane and a Gattuso, they've done that in...
Yes, in Champions League Chrome.
Oh, I love that, because I'm half Italian, half Irish. Obviously, I support AC Milan, so it's like, that's, like, this beautiful, wonderful card. Now, if that was in national kit format, class, again, I obviously don't have Italy license, so I'll admit that, but what I'm saying is, that's very specific to me. There's not too many Irish-Italian people that are also collecting cards out there, to my knowledge.
Yes.
Right? But it's like, that doesn't happen at the national level. But if it's
going back to that example, for me, if I see that card, it has a whole other story behind it, because it's like, oh yeah, these are two players that played roughly at the same time, are like, I remember them very
industrial.
They had a similar profile, ball winners, hard men, you know, same era, won loads, like
100%. Like that makes sense. There's a whole
story behind that card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That makes sense as a combo, but it's just, that's what I'm saying. I like, they could, like, this checklist could have had an Irish dual autograph that would have been something Irish people chase. And like, it's disappointing that the kind of fad of Micah Richards in there kind of caught the attention. Again, that's an Alan Linkinter card for me. That, because that made, like, I understand where it came from. It's not random. I understand where it came from, but like, that's Alan Linkinter. I don't know if they ever do Alan Linkinter double autos or booklets or whatever the case may be, but that's what that is.
I do think in general the licensing issues have thrown the whole thing for a loop.
That's true. They've had to get creative based on that. But for me, Jason, no matter what way you look at it, I'm not putting a licensed card dual autographing it with an unlicensed card.
Mm.
Don't diminish the license that you have. Don't put an Irish licensed kit on with an England kit ever, but don't do it if it's unlicensed as well. Like, keep your unlicensed, jewel them up together. That way, the people that don't care, because now you have people that, like, you might, the Roy Keane image and the kit might be unreal, and you might be like, that's actually class. And now it's actually, not only because it's an English player or Micah Richards and whatever, but it's like, it's actually like, there's an unlicensed part of this card on this card that I actually fucking love. Like, that's going to, rather if it was like another random nation and they had a kit, because then you could have an association to that. I don't know. I think they might need to re-look at the approach of creating collectability and looking at how people collect national teams versus clubs.
Yeah, and just to go back to what Panini do, like, Panini are a different, they have a whole different set of problems.
They have a dartboard.
And they produce loads and loads and loads, they produce hundreds and thousands of national team kit cards that don't have any value.
Yeah.
Because they've accepted that is a part of creating national team products.
Like, I'll look at this, right? right on screen. I have a 2014 World Cup Prism Cannavaro autograph.
Yeah.
I love this card. It's going to be a big PC card for me. But like even me, like I get irked because he's in his 2006 World Cup kit, which actually like I like that because they won the World Cup and I love that kit. But it's like to have that previous tournament kit on a 2014 World Cup card is also... I'm just saying like they're not perfect. And this is like without even the fourth star. So this is literally just an image from the 2006 World Cup that they've used in their 2014 collection, which for me is also a complete disgrace. And I understand why they can't necessarily have the modern kit because that kit kind of debuts at the World Cup, sometimes a little bit before. I don't know. I think national kits, there's a total different vibe to the national collectability. Haaland is less collectible as a Norwegian kitted player in this current industry than he would be for Norway. Man City, Norway. Do you know what I mean? Like the collector base of Norwegians is much smaller than the collector base of Man City fans or Borussia Dortmund fans, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's also a different association, which means maybe say the collectability of Granit Xhaka in a Switzerland kit is much higher than the collectability of Granit Xhaka for other teams. Obviously now winning with Leverkusen might change that, but you know what I mean? Players that are of less value increase the value in a national kit and other players go the other way. That makes sense.
Yeah, basically it's a movable feast. And you know, we are, I guess, going to see over the course of this.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Of this summer, how it goes. But it's interesting. Right now, there's a lot of questions we have to answer. My God.
Hey, my goodness.
We spent 20 minutes talking about Pristine.
What are we, a soccer card podcast?
You want to stay here for 20 minutes talking about soccer card releases? Okay, this is actually from our previous episode, episode 218, and Mad City Collector left this comment on our YouTube, so just to raise a discussion point. So he says, you touch on this, and I've had multiple discussions about this with people recently, but it is probably the most critical question for people who are worried about the soccer card market or the sports card market in general. Your business and lots of other businesses in the hobby benefit from the continued strength / high prices of new products. But the market cannot sustain both the purchases of high-priced new products and the strength of singles from older products. From an economic standpoint, eventually an equilibrium will have to be reached between buying new products and older singles. It seems like collector mentality is not currently winning out over speculation and gambling mentality. I can see you're pulled in both directions for the future of the hobby. Do you see the appetite for new products waning at their current prices, or are they as hot as ever? I personally have not bought a new wax in over 2 years because of these market forces and have really enjoyed concentrating on older singles and sets.
I think if you're in this hobby and you're focused on old singles and sets, you're having a much better time.
Yes.
I think it's a sounder investment for the most part, unless you're really chasing kind of a modern grail card, you're chasing 101s and breaks and stuff like that. I think you are going to have a better, I don't want to say ROI, but like long term, I think if you're just buying kind of the classic sets, the old school stuff, I think it is definitely a safe way to go. Other people obviously do love the thrill of the new stuff, the chase, the shiny stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. I feel like I agree with his sentiment. I do think that's happening in this market. I think that the successive growth of the soccer card market in the last few years has led to the manufacturers, both Panini Tops and all the other little smaller manufacturers, printing way too much stuff because the demand is there. But I do think when we look back in years to come, these are not going to be sets that we kind of fawn
over.
They
are classics.
They're not classics. That's it. They were hot for a moment and they're classics. And it does feel like a lot of the times with new sets, the life expectancy of the sealed wax even doesn't have that long of a lifespan. Shelf life, should I say.
Yeah. Especially because of the way the market is now, with Whatnot and Fanatics Live and everything else, it's kind of like it's hot while it's been broken. And then once there's a new thing out that the breakers have in stock, it moves a little bit on.
We can't underestimate, Jason, sorry to cut you off there, just you touched on a good point. You can't underestimate that there's a lot of money coming into the soccer card market by companies like Whatnot that are incentivizing breakers to break stuff. And so a lot of people are kind of breaking almost at a loss or without risk because bigger companies are kind of funding or subsidizing that in order to get their analytics of how many people are on their platform, et cetera, et cetera. So there is, like, I suppose, almost a stimulus check still being written for the soccer card market and the sports card market in general, that like if that money stops flowing, we might see a bigger issue in the market.
Yeah. I think for collectors, like, I don't know if you saw the other day, I bought a Willian on ComC. It was a 2015 select patch. And I know for me, like, obviously we for the YouTube channel and for the podcast and all this stuff, we spend a lot of time around new products. And to the point where I almost like view the new products more as like more as work to a certain extent. Like that's kind of, you know, if I'm reviewing a new product comes out, Topps Pristine comes out, I'm making a YouTube video. I'm kind of, I'm in my, you know, Jason from Soccer United mode. And so for me to kind of get a bit of like pure hobby energy or kind of like be in the headspace of I'm just collecting or I'm just looking at cool stuff, I like to go back a few years because it feels more relaxing because nobody's chasing you and asking you, how much did you buy that for? I'll give you this much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So there is kind of, I think, as you say, kind of a piece to be found, like almost like collecting sets from a few years ago. It's like, it's not much, but it's honest work, you know?
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice,
This beautiful 2018 Donruss. So again, you don't have to travel too far back in time, such as the kind of nature
because soccer,
of the hobby.
Soccer cards are so new.
They're so new. Like 2014 is kind of as old as it gets in terms of, yeah. I mean, obviously there is a lot.
There is vintage, but
yeah. Not just that, there's so many kind of weird sets that do exist prior, even Upper Deck and stuff like that. But
yeah,
there's a 2018 Donruss, and that was 1-1 as well. That was an unbelievable. I seen that on eBay and I just had to buy it. I couldn't leave it on eBay. But I agree with you, Jason. There is almost a calmness to collecting. And I think if you don't want to be in the chase of the new stuff, definitely it's a smart thing to kind of stick with the old stuff and find what you want to collect and to buy it. But I think what he was saying as well is that people are doing that. People are funneling money into Pelé rookies. They're funneling money into completing a 2014 World Cup Prism set, whatever the case may be. And Man City there are saying, if a lot of the money starts going there and continues to go there, that money is being taken away from the new sets coming out. So he's saying there's going to be a point where a lot of the kind of, like if you have a big guy who's buying into a lot of breaks and suddenly he decides he wants to just buy a Messi rookie instead, that's like 200 grand or whatever the case may be out of the breaking hobby and out of the new wax product. But like, that might happen. I think we do have to remember, Jason, the manufacturers can just print less. If they can take 1 year where they just print less, the whole ecosystem would be healthier.
Yes, true. Yeah.
But that goes against
that idea of people taking money from the new products and putting them into the old products. I feel like whenever I meet, and this is purely anecdotal evidence, this hasn't been scientifically collected or anything, but I do feel like, especially because when we were traveling an awful lot all the time to card shows, I would meet people, and the people who tended to be walking around with the most money in their pocket to spend tended not to be the ones chasing the new products. You know, they'd kind of come up and they'd say, I collect, you know, XYZ from 2019. Have you got any? And if you say no, it's like, all right. If you say yes, they take out a big wad of cash and go, great, let's do something here.
Yeah,
So I do feel like the more, a lot of the kind of high-end collecting or the kind of the collecting with the real money behind it, which makes sense because obviously things don't become collectible overnight.
Yeah.
So if you are a high-end collector of stuff, it has to have some age to it. It has to have some scarcity to it. Whereas it comes to like, say with breakers who are just breaking whatever the latest product is, you're spending your money not on the product, but on the break. You're paying for the experience.
Yeah. And you're trying to chase the 101s.
You're trying to chase the 101s and that's kind of all part, you know, that's all part of it. It's almost like to a certain extent, the difference between spending all your money on new video games and playing all the latest AAA video games versus collecting sealed video games from previous years. Yeah, okay, both of you are spending your money on video games, but it's very different.
Yeah, very, very different.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a weird one because at the same time, in the backdrop of all of that, you do feel like soccer hasn't really even begun as becoming kind of a mainstream thing.
Exactly.
But you do kind of think, though, if they came out with a year of really high quality sets that were very scarce, that led to some form of pandemonium that would then kind of reach the higher end people that want to get in. But obviously that kind of goes against collecting as well. So it's a weird one. It does feel like Formula One in 2020 had such a crazy kind of announcement into the card world where they ended up with so many high-end collectors that are just kind of whales that just exist in that hobby. But yeah. Like that wouldn't have happened if they came out with the 2021 print runs that they came out with and the 2021 products they came out with. So I don't know. It's a weird one. Trying to hit mass consciousness. Because like I do think in the soccer hobby, what is kind of missing is a lot of high-end collectors.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, like a lot of the stuff that Matt City there is talking about, as he says, is also applies to other sports. They're having these discussions in basketball. They're having these discussions in baseball. The one advantage we have over them is that we can steal their collectors. You know, because if you're a high-end basketball collector, your average spend per card is a lot higher than if you're a high-end soccer collector.
Yeah. And there's opportunity in that.
We have kind of the lowest-end high-end.
Yeah, which is bizarre.
Considering we're the biggest sport in the world.
Yeah, but that's how it is. That's how it goes.
That's how it is, yeah.
Basketball is different. Basketball cards, different.
Different. So I suppose we'll leave the listeners to think on that one, and we'll crack on to the Twitter questions. Okay. Do you see all these questions from Cedar Hollow, by any chance?
I did, yeah. I seen some of them.
All right, so Cedar Hollow has a whole show produced for us here.
Let's go.
Right. Not really a question, more of a request. Please talk me off a ledge after this pathetic Liverpool performance. So he's a Liverpool fan.
You're only 3 points off top. Arsenal have to do a North London derby this weekend. City, well, we won't talk about them, but there's a chance they slip up. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But it could happen. They only need a draw and then they're back down with the rest of them.
True.
But they do always spawn with a few games left and they just have games in hand. That always happens.
That's right. Because they've been in every tournament
for the longest.
Yeah. Also, like just in general with Liverpool, Michael Edwards is back at FSG and has taken back the reins at the organizational level. Klopp is leaving. Obviously, he's tired. They're tired. A lot of the players he recruited are tired. So basically, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to just
deal with a transitional period. You've had your success. And unfortunately, you, one of Liverpool's, the potential of one of Liverpool's most successful periods as a football club was impacted by psychotic Pep Guardiola and 115 charges, Manchester City, keeping his penned in second place and penned for other titles. So unfortunate. But he did manage to win the lot in the meantime. We got the, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold took a quick corner. Don't forget that.
So corner take quickly.
Yeah, that's
You'll
always have the memories. And now that's the beauty of being a football fan is that you don't appreciate the highs until you've lumbered in the lows. I'm sure you were around when Stuart Downing was being signed for 20 million and the likes of it.
So I believe the last time Everton beat Liverpool at Goodison Park, Paul Konchesky was playing for Liverpool.
There you go. So listen.
You know, you've had it okay. It's been all
right. You've had it all
right. Yeah. All right, please share your predictions for the winner of each league plus the Euros.
Okay, the winner of each league. Well, Serie A, we're not going to get into.
It's already been, yeah.
The Premier League, I do think Man City do it. Because
I think Man City are going to do it.
Too. Ultimately, like I look at the other teams and I don't think they're league title winning teams. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also think Man City might get rattled. They might be fatigued as well. To be honest, I'm giving it to Arsenal, Jason. I'm changing my pick.
Oh,
the Gunners do it, and they're delighted. In a year where Granit Xhaka wins a league title, I think the Gunners win a league title. That's my opinion.
Right.
Although White Hart Lane is going to be nuts. That's going to be a crazy.
Every other top five league has been decided, so we're going to just do the Champions League and the Europa League and the Europa Conference League.
Yeah, I want to say Arsenal win the league on goal difference.
Arsenal to win the league on goal difference.
I think City are going to get a draw, and I think they're going to win the league on goal difference.
Right.
You're saying City?
I'm saying City.
Not an ounce of romance in your heart, Jason.
Without breaking a sweat, I'm going to say. They're going to use every one of those 115 charges.
Oh, my God.
Right. Champions League, it's Dortmund and PSG and Bayern and Real Madrid. I'm going to say PSG.
PSG to win the lot.
Yeah.
I actually think this is a very tough last four because I think each of those semifinals could go either way. Yeah. I don't think any of the teams are at their best at all.
I think PSG are finding form at the right time.
Oh, yeah. But like my thinking is Dortmund could definitely do it. Like they could beat PSG, I mean. I'm not talking about the final.
Yeah.
My thinking is that Real Madrid, great as they've been and they have the power of friendship on their side, they are too one-dimensional.
Right.
If you can mark Vinny Jr. and Rodrigo, you're grand, pretty much. If you can mark that counter-attack, you're pretty much okay. I'm going to say Real Madrid with Jude Bellingham winning the Ballon d'Or in the meantime. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Jude Bellingham to have three absolute storming performances. But genuinely speaking, I think all four teams could win it. And I do think PSG winning it would be a really good thing for the entire soccer card market. If Mbappe can take the final bits of the EL tournament by storm and then make a move to Real Madrid after successfully giving PSG what they want, which is a Champions League title.
Yeah.
And being such a legend at PSG because the amount of goals he scored, it's insane. So I like that for the romance, but I do think I feel like Jude Bellingham Real Madrid, but at the same time I don't really think that they're going to beat Bayern, so it's a bit confusing. I don't know what I feel.
Listen, I mean, I'm excited. You know, Thomas Tuchel won it with Chelsea, got to the final with PSG. He's a good cup manager. He's looking at there's a lot of top clubs that need a new boss next season. He's thinking, listen, Bayern, out of a rotten season, I win the Champions League, I'm still deadly.
It's not that bad if you win the Champions League, is it?
It's not that bad if you have a Champions League name, no.
Yeah, that's very Thomas Tuchel. To be honest, yeah, it could go any which way. I wouldn't be surprised. It's not the best of answers, but that's how I feel.
Right. And I'll go PSG because I just want people to appreciate Mbappe. I'm sick of it.
I'm tired.
The Europa League, we've Roma and Leverkusen on one side and Marseille, Atalanta. I suppose for the Romans, I have to go Leverkusen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for them to do an unbeaten season as well, which they're very close to doing, I think, yeah, you have to do. You've got to give it to Xabi Alonso.
The treble is on.
The unbeaten treble is on, which I don't think has ever been done. So, and to see that in Dublin, hopefully, Jason.
Oh yeah,
amazing. I'd like an Atalanta Leverkusen final. I think that would be carnage.
Yeah, I feel,
but
like,
to be honest, don't write off De Rossi's Roma. They're not going to let Leverkusen just win two games. No chance.
No, Roma were one of the last teams to beat Leverkusen at the end of last season.
There you go.
So, and the Conference League. What's happening in the Conference League?
I have no
Villa
idea.
Villa versus Olympiacos.
Oh, give it Ollie Watkins. Ollie Watkins to fire Villa to another European crown. They've won the European Cup, haven't they?
Sorry,
Villa.
And Fiorentina versus Club Brugge. I think Villa have that.
Yeah, I think Villa have it. Ollie Watkins. They've had too good of a season. Unai Emery is unreal.
He's unreal, manager. Yeah.
Give him the respect he deserves.
Ollie Watkins, Moussa Diaby, Leon Bailey.
Zaniolo.
John McGinn, Nicolo Zaniolo, yeah.
What a team he's put together in such a short span of time. Yeah, no, that has to go to Villa. And given that another European title for an English club in the lower European competition.
Right. And then we need a Euros prediction.
It has to be Germany, doesn't it?
I think I go for Germany, yeah.
Yeah, I think Germany.
I mean, France, obviously, England, obviously, Spain, obviously.
Oh, so yeah, actually, excuse me. France and I would say England are probably they might be my favourites. I don't know if they're bookie favourites. No, look, Germany have had a great season, but Leverkusen, spine of Germany, whatever, like the Florian Wirtz of the world and the Musiala for Bayern Munich. But I do think England, I completely dismissed them and I apologise for that to all of our listeners from England. But I do think Southgate has had three really good tournaments back to back to back. And I think the team... No, relax. Wait. I think the team has that tournament experience now. A lot of them, it might be one of their last tournaments. Kyle Walker's so, so good. So if he's fit... And Jude Bellingham's having such a good season. I think their biggest trouble, as it always is trying to fit all the players in together and all this. But I do think, with Harry Maguire at the back, now that he's banging in goals at the right time.
Yeah.
I think Southgate might get the job done with England. I do. I believe it. But the tournament is in Germany, which is why I didn't hesitate to say the Germans. And they have home advantage.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Southgate might... Imagine that for a story. If they beat Germany on penalties in the final, Jason, can you believe it?
There's no way it's going to happen. I mean, you saw that Italy team beat them in the last Euros.
Don't disrespect.
I'm saying it was a great, amazing performance and very well managed. But what I'm saying is that
was
England,
the home advantage for England.
That was in Wembley. Like,
listen, Italy are there. So to be honest with you, there's only one winner of this tournament. Whatever team we happen to have and scrape together, Pafundi is going to fire us to the championship.
Willy Nonto with his pristine prodigies.
Honestly, I think England have a high chance of winning. I don't think Spain, I know that they have a great little team, but I don't think so. I think England, I think France, obviously Mbappe could have a crazy tournament again like he did in the World Cup.
And France have the best team.
Yes, but I'm giving it England. But at the same time, in fairness, England in all their tournaments had a really easy run to the semis or to the final or whatever the case may be. They don't really have the bottle in the later stages. But I genuinely believe in my soul, Jason, something happens in football where the experience level, like, I don't know, like, you just sometimes you look at teams and go, they're just due to win it. Like, whether it's in the Champions League or whether it's in national level, you get to a point where it's like, they have players that are all now 30 and they've so much experience. They've done it all before and they haven't won it. Like when Chelsea won the Champions League, it's like, yeah, Drogba and Lampard are going to win a Champions League at some point. Like, it has to happen.
Mm.
And I feel that now with the England team. It's like, it's just the Euros. Like, just, you'd be grand.
I tell you what, I think,
Phil Foden and Jude Bellingham and all that, and then just Kyle Walker keeping it tight at the back. Like, I think
it's all coming together so nicely for the anticipation of England to reach fever pitch as the tournament starts, and then for them to get absolutely slapped around. So I know I'll have fun this summer.
It's going to be a good summer. I think, to be honest, the only thing that gets in the way of England, unfortunately, as all England fan knows, is Gareth Southgate.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. Right. Who has the best manager out of the three? Germany, France, England.
France.
Is he still, is Deschamps still there?
Deschamps still the manager, yeah. I mean, that's like Didier Deschamps, France. Like, I mean,
No.
They're not to be written off.
Not at all. I didn't write any of them off. I think, you know what, you're saying, Jason, I think you've just said a PSG and France doubleheader with Mbappe firing a Champions League. This is what you just said. Champions League crown for PSG, Euros for France, picking up the Ballon d'Or on his way to Real Madrid. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. I'm an absolute Mbappe loyalist, turns out.
You have one Mbappe card to your name.
Yeah.
Very good.
I have one opinion that I just trotted out no matter what happens. And that opinion is Mbappe is class.
Yeah, Mbappe is actually really, really talented.
Yeah, so if Mbappe is involved, you know my answer in future. Okay. How is Makino Quantitative asks, how is the Futera brand viewed in Europe? Is it like Leaf in America?
I don't think it's like Leaf in America. I think that it's not like Futera Leaf in America, no. Didn't do the best of jobs when the boom was kind of happening over here. We're all discovering the hobby to kind of capitalize on the fact that they were kind of like historically relevant in
Europe. People knew them, yeah.
Yeah, people knew them here. But definitely not like Leaf, especially with the licensing that they now have for various teams. I think Leaf is complete dirt garbage and Futera is still below Panini and Topps, but not by too much.
Also, I don't know if people know this, Futera is massive in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're headquartered. That's like, they only recently reopened in the last few years, recently reopened their European, like any kind of like ground operation in the UK or anything. So like, they're a massive global brand. Not like Leaf at all.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
They do have a lot of heritage.
They do indeed. Okay, questions from Instagram here now, moving over. Speaking of Leaf and Futera, this goes perfectly into Iconic Trading Cards has asked, how come no new trading card publishers have come onto the scene?
Who would?
Who'd Fanatics be a trading card manufacturer?
Who would be a trading card manufacturer? I think Fanatics are killing people. I think the licensing is expensive and being hoarded day by day. We have seen some pop up in Asia. We obviously see DACA showed up and FansMall. I'm not sure how long of a history they have, but they both seem like relatively new companies.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some happening in Asia. I haven't really seen it happening anywhere else, to be honest.
No, I suppose the closest we've seen to new entries into the market in the last few years have probably been digital.
True.
Because, you know, like, it's very, very hard to start manufacturing trading cards.
Printers are tough. It's tough to get stuff printed, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's not an easy. Who would be a trading card manufacturer? That's it. Even if you rise to the top of the game, there's nothing but criticism.
Yeah.
For everything you do.
Bloke spent 20 minutes absolutely damn bastard you when you're just trying to figure out how to make digital trading cards.
Yeah, come on. It's tough.
Right, let's see.
I would just say the cost of doing it, the cost of entry is probably what is deterring
massive.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so big. Like, I mean, you look at someone like Futera, which you could argue, but buying licenses is the closest thing we've seen to kind of entering the market.
Yeah.
And it's like, people even just go, oh, that's not Topps Chrome, fuck you. You know, so it is really, who would invest in getting the licenses, figuring out all the manufacturing, the packaging, everything, and then marketing and promoting it only to find out people are like, that's not top scorer.
Yes.
Nah, that'd be horrible. I wouldn't do it. Wouldn't be me.
And by the way, why have the only trading card publishers come onto the scene? I think if you look at it a certain way, Fanatics bought Topps.
That's true.
They
came onto the scene and disguised the behind Topps.
Yeah.
That's true.
There is a new trading card manufacturer. They're called Fanatics. They're just hiding behind Topps.
Yeah, that right. Yeah, that right, Jason.
And look how big they had to be to enter the space.
Yeah.
You know, Very big. Billions.
You need white parties going every year.
Exactly. Right, couple of questions here that are actually similar. So Sports Cards UK wants to know, because he's going to the National for the first time this summer.
Oh, yes. Go, Dan.
What are our tips and tricks for going to your first National? And then Rippin' Dodgers is also going to the National, who we met last year. Any hotel recommendations for the National? It doesn't know that there are many options close to the venue. Thanks. For hotels for Cleveland, we are staying downtown because there doesn't seem to be any hotels.
Yeah, apparently Cleveland National does not have a lot of hotels near the venue. So you're better off staying downtown and trying to get a mix of what Cleveland has to offer and getting over to your venue. I suppose there is a soccer card expo kind of trade night thing going on. So it wouldn't be a terrible idea to find a hotel near that, because then if you want to kind of go to that as a trade night, you could be easily located to that. And then obviously make your way to the actual venue for National during the day wouldn't be a bad move.
I'll start off with that for tips and tricks for your first National. Go to trade nights.
Yeah. Especially the specific trade night of soccer, Formula One, whatever you're interested in. Don't go like the general trade night. Yeah. Try to go to it. That's a bit crazy though. And it's going to be basketball. It's going to be baseball. It's going to be NFL. Yes,
but coming at it as a soccer collector, if you're a soccer collector and you're going, make sure you hit the trade nights. It's arguably not worth going unless you go to the trade nights.
Yeah. It makes sense to, give that bit of advice on the soccer. You know, we almost apologetically did it on the. If you're a soccer, if you happen to be a soccer card collector while listening to the Soccer Tonight podcast, what we'd recommend. Definitely go to trade nights. You obviously have to work your dinner out around that. You want to be honest, like this might be, and it's not in everyone's budget, but if you're planning to go for the full 5 days or even 4 days, I think it is worth getting the VIP ticket because it covers all days. You get early access, which just makes it a bit more pleasant. You're not surrounded by as many people. When you're getting in early, you can actually look at tables. And if one of my tips is you don't need to be there for the full length of the show. So if you have the early access,
biggest tip of all,
if you have the early access, you can get in while it's not crazy busy. You can actually look at tables, have time to chat to people, interact with people. And then you can also get out early enough that you can have a normal lunch. You can have a dinner and then you can go to a trade night fresh instead of really, really suffering. Like the VIP goodie bags and all are all kind of shite in general, especially if you're coming at it from a European and soccer collector. There's nothing really in the goodie bags for you.
Especially if you've been to the Dublin Card Show.
Oh, if you've been to the Dublin Card, you're not going to get nothing like that at the National somehow. Somehow we were able to do that, and the National is only able to put leaflets in it. Shocking. I've had that beef since like day one. Since our first National, I was like, this is that fucking these.
You should have seen the look on Enzo's face when he opened that first National goodie bag.
Because you're going to like Card Show Disneyland.
Yeah.
And it was just horrible. But yeah, so but it's brilliant. Have your Zion case with you. Always be ready. Never forget. Have cash. You're planning, like, your deals are a lot easier if you have cash.
Yeah.
When we asked for tips, we were told to bring Tylenol and Advil.
Yeah.
Wear comfortable shoes. Wear comfortable shoes. I don't think you'll need painkillers, but I do think comfortable shoes will get you there. And I suppose, like when you see Jeff Wilson, don't go near him.
If
he's in, like, look at him and then look like 10 feet either side of him. There's probably an entire camera crew fixed on him that if you try to talk, it's going to be a bad time for him. He's there. It's showtime. It's lights, camera, action. So don't disturb your favorite influencers, I would say. But definitely chat to as many people as you can. If you do see people that you like, you can just try to read the room a little bit and then you can chat to your favorite online personas, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, for Dan specifically, he might have the opposite problem.
Oh, be careful. So this is also, again, Dan, get the VIP tickets because the best thing is not the goodie bag at all. It kind of might be the early access, but for me, the best thing is that you get a little room. There's like kind of a VIP area and it's a room. You get your tables. It's basically just a sit-down place. There's food in there as well. There's drinks in there. You still have to pay for that, but they are really nice. They were in Chicago. Amazing. Amazing sliders. But it's kind of a place where, like, everyone else that's also VIP is just sitting in this room, and it is a good networking place. It's good to chat, but it's also good just to get away from it all. It's kind of a regroup station, I would call it. Like, we'd go there open boxes of cards or just chat to people or do some trades with people that we know, it's well worth it. I don't know how big the financial difference is in it, but I do think it's worth it.
Yeah, so if you can go VIP, it's worth it for those reasons. And even if you're not going VIP, it's still worth managing your time in such a way that you don't burn out. I mean, because Friday and Saturday specifically, Saturday is like your big day.
No, but to be honest, for me, it's like kind of try have everything wrapped up before Saturday, because Saturday is the busiest day. So yeah,
it's Saturday is the big day in terms of at the show. So if you need to get anything done, the rest of the week is when you can get that done. Don't expect to get anything done on Saturday. Saturday is like the equivalent of just like, I don't know.
Carnage. I mean, it's just like Christmas Eve and you're trying to get shopping done.
Yes, it's like trying to get shopping done on Christmas Eve. Exactly.
When we went there last year, like we submitted a card to PSA and they do like turnaround during the show. So they'll grade it and give it back to you towards the end of the week or whatever. So if you plan to do that, that's all stuff to do day one. Just get it done. Yeah. Get it out of the way. And that's where like the early entry helps you. And I think we did
redemptions. And doing the Topps wrapper redemption and all that stuff.
This is my third year. Oh, well, there's two different types of redemptions. There's the Panini redemption.
There's Panini redemptions, and then there's the wrapper redemption.
So this is my third year of trying to get a Panini redemption. This is the third year of the same redemption, but this year I'm actually going to get it. So if you have redemptions in the Panini system that you have redeemed, it's important. You must redeem it. So you have to go online, redeem it. And if it's sat there for longer than 60 days and they haven't redeemed it for you, you're going to be eligible to change it for a black box or a white box or whatever on the day of the show. The only way to actually be on that system is in the lead up to the show, at some point, Panini are going to open up a thing where you can actually slot in the time. So basically, if you have a load of redemptions, you need to redeem them within 60 days. So like 60 days before National, redeem it, or a bit earlier if you can. That way it's been unredeemed for 60 days. Yep. If you're lucky enough to be unredeemed for 60 days, you can then use that and book a place and just decide that you want a black box or a white box, or whatever. I have a Danny Alves who just got out of prison, so I'm very concerned that might get redeemed.
Memphis, friend of the show, Memphis from earlier, got him out on bail.
So I'm really hoping that doesn't, because I have a National Treasures on-card autograph, Danny Alves. I do not want to redeem. I want my black box or whatever. I wanted that experience. But I also have a Frank Kessier who, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to get their hands on. A 101 Origins Frank Kessier, who is in a Milan kit the year they won the league, which I would have actually loved in that card, but I don't care. Apparently, if you're swapping in a 101, they don't really understand the value, so they just give you like a good black box or a white box or whatever. So yeah, as soon as that opens up in the lead up to the event, you're able to kind of book a slot. So you need to basically pre-book it online, and you need to have had it pending redemption for 60 days. So basically 60 days of it being unfulfilled for it to work. In terms of wrapper redemptions and stuff, our biggest tip used to be buy Topps Finest Bundesliga as the redemption product from one of the designated wholesale distributors. Take it over to the people, because what they do is they'll cut the box open. But if it's Finest and there's mini boxes inside it, they'd only cut the outer box. So we managed to get we bought the boxes, got it cut, got our redemption packets, but then still had sealed boxes that we could sell, which were the mini boxes. I think that they do it 1 year back, so I guess Bundesliga Finest might still be an option, but maybe. That's obviously going to change in the future. So if you're getting... my advice on that, Jason, sorry. If you're going to do the Panini or the Topps packet redemption things, do it day one of the National, because I am convinced that they're front-loaded, Jason, because of course they are. It makes sense. Think of this. This is what happened last year. People went day one, they done the whole shimmig to get the stuff. They were hitting Super Factor 101s, and then everyone else went into pandemonium mode to get the packets. My packets didn't even have a parallel on them. It was shocking. Maybe they had one. But like, so my opinion is that they're going to front load them, because of course they're like, we're going to have 100,000 people over the course of these 5 days or whatever, or every day on these 5 days. I can't remember. Word will get out day one that these shit's lit, and then the rest of the time people are going to be getting it. Makes sense from a marketing point of view. It is a conspiracy theory from me, but I believe it. So if you're going to do that, get that done day one.
Right. I think that's a good chunk of advice for the National.
People were not expecting those advices from me, but
I don't think so.
A National vet at this point.
Speaking of being a grizzled veteran, Liam wants to know. He says he'll be vendoring at for the first time at the London Card Show next month. Do you have any essential tips for setting up at a show now that you are a grizzled veteran?
Oh, here we go. Have everything priced, Have everything physically priced, or at least know what you want for it all. Do not, if someone says, what price is that? Don't take your phone out and start looking for it, which we were guilty of in the past. But if everything is priced, it's very easy to sell them. something else, Jason.
I would say for a busy show like London, if you can get a card machine.
Yeah.
If you're selling a lot of stuff, obviously if you only have like high end stuff on your table and you're not expecting to do that many deals, but the deals are going to be of high value, then that's fine. You can work out with the people that are buying those, PayPal or you know whatever. But if you're going to be selling a lot of stuff, people are going to be asking, do you take card? And there are card machines you can get for free that charge like a 1% fee or something on the transactions. So if you're going to be doing big enough sales that you might need one, get a card machine that is worth the investment, I think. Mm-hmm. Other than that, have somebody with you if you can.
Yeah, get an extra pair of hands with you because it is a grueling day that requires you being able to leave your table at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Have a change with you in case you want cash.
Yeah.
And be ready for absolute carnage. Be friendly. Don't be afraid to bring some of your lower end stuff if you are kind of a higher end person, because lower end does move at any show very, very well.
Yep. Essential tips for setting up at a card show.
It's been a while, Jason. Dublin was the last one we were at.
Yeah. Yeah, in general, like, you know, try and stay relaxed. Try and have fun. If somebody comes up to you, like, I would say try and not spend, if it's just you at the table, try to not spend too long on any one deal.
And try not to buy too much. People are going to come up to you trying to sell. So, no, understand what you're there for. If you're there just to make a bit of cash, if you're there trying to cover the cost of the trip, don't be afraid to tell, like, when people are handing you the cards, don't be afraid to say, there's nothing for me here, sorry.
Yeah. As long as you're, worry about kind of being polite and friendly. Don't worry about anything beyond that. Polite and friendly does not mean overly generous.
Yeah. And like, if people are coming at you with like 100 cards going, oh, look through this, is there anything you like here? I want to do a trade. Like, have enough respect to say, listen, pull out 10 of your best things and 10, you know, or say like, yeah. I collect AC Milan, pull me out AC Milan. If you don't have AC Milan, sorry, I can't do it. Cause you'll lose a lot of, like, you've bought a footprint in a place with a lot of foot traffic. You'll lose a lot of time flicking through someone's shite or someone's good stuff that's just not for you. If they don't have the kind of respect to be able to give you 10 cards and say, is there anything there for you? Or if they don't have the respect to say, what do you collect? I'll see if I had, and then let them find the cards. If they just give you all their shit, their big box of shit, and say, I really want your really good card you have there. Do you want to look through this and see if there's anything there for you? Tell them at the trade night later. You come in the trade night later, I can do that at the trade night. Right now, I have my space and I have people that want to buy stuff. I cannot look through your Zion case or your box of cards and lose 20 minutes of time to try and find stuff. And if people approach you and they don't have prices for their stuff, tell them to get out of town.
Yep. Very good. So basically just try and kind of stay customer to customer. Don't get like too
friendly.
Wrapped in. Unless you're doing like a $5,000 deal or something, someone's like, you know, that's fine. But like, don't worry about telling people, listen, I'm not interested right now. If you want to circle back or whatever, you can later on or talk to me at trade night. But like, just, it's okay to move people on. That's all right.
Yeah.
Which is hard because in this part of the world, we're very, very concerned with
being mean.
Coming across as like, ooh, look at him.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to.
It is important. People will take you for all you're worth to get their deals done and they don't even have a table. So you got to be.
Yeah. If they wanted this card, if they wanted these cards moved badly enough, they could have got a table themselves.
And if they want your card badly enough, they can put the hand in their pocket.
Yeah. I don't know if we came across as
are we jaded?
Or embittered, jaded people.
Yeah, because it's like, you have all these cards, but you're telling me you have no money. Where'd you get all these cards for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to start telling people.
You didn't pay for them with buttons.
Yeah, where'd you get all this for if you have no money to your name? Why did everyone else get your money and then you're coming to me and I need to take your cards?
Eamon replied to the question sticker and just said that Derby County are on course to go back to the championship and they're second currently in League One. Portsmouth have already been promoted. So I guess just congratulations then to...
Yeah, absolutely.
To Eamon, yeah. Who's playing for...
Congratulations to Eamon.
James Collins, the erstwhile Ireland striker. Nathaniel Mendez-Lang from Guatemala. Very good. Very good. So best of luck to Eamon and Derby County on the run in.
I respect it.
Let's see. Soccer Cards with a K wants to ask, what is your assessment of European hobby growth so far in 2024?
I've seen a lot more Irish people pop up, so I'm vibing with it. I think the French have gone crazy.
Yeah.
Were you about to say that?
Just on Ireland, I was going to say that I went on a couple of prominent US breakers websites to see how much the Ireland spots were for Pristine.
They were higher than a lot of other spots as well, I seen Ireland 65, Wales was like 40. No disrespect to our Wales friends, but says a lot.
Says a lot, yeah. France is popping off.
France is doing really well. France has discovered the hobby fully, and they're getting there. They'll be a force to be reckoned with. I think obviously Wemby helps that, but I think the main thing was a Ligue 1 score last year and then this year. And there's so much content creation going on over there. There's shows going on all over France. France has been the most exciting European country, I think, in 2024 that really seems to have popped off. And non-sports as well, by the way. We've had a lot of Star Wars sales to France and stuff like that and Stranger Things. So France has discovered the hobby. I believe Whatnot is there now. So I think Whatnot is helping as well. Whatnot and Vought are there. Vought are based there, I believe. So there's live selling platforms over there in France. They kind of have all they need to do it. And it's happening. So France has been wonderful.
Yeah, and France being the second largest country in Europe
helps, because Germany is such a juggernaut in the European market that now
if the French market was the size of the German market, we'd be really, really doing really, really well over here.
Giggling, Jason.
And then to finish off on what we started off on, Rainy City Cards wants to know, have we got any thoughts on breakers ripping Euros Pristine before release?
Yeah, I think that it is shocking that the manufacturer, in this case Topps, and in many cases Panini, don't do a better job at actually having a real release date and having all of their distributors, breakers, shops respecting that date. I think it's shocking.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good.
And like, I don't even hate when like Fanatics do their kind of Fanatics Live one day early, but even they must hate it, because it's like we do our one day early thing, but people are opening it 2 or 3 days early. So it's ridiculous. So I just think there needs to be really, really harsh repercussions to that, because ultimately in an ideal scenario in the hobby, people like us, especially, like we have an online store, we would have our stuff in advance with the knowledge that we can't, open it until release day. You can't sell it till release day. Like it's much better to have it in advance and then have a strict rule versus, like, for example, Liverpool Chrome came out last Friday. We don't have it yet.
Yeah.
You know, if we had it in advance with strict rules that we can't sell it till Friday, we would have had it on release day, and release day would have actually been an event.
Many Liverpool fans that keep messaging us asking,
"Yeah, do you have it? We could.
I'm going to get my Liverpool Chrome."
Yeah, like if I had Liverpool Chrome before they lost the Merseyside Derby, I think there would have been more interest in it. There'd been more buoyancy in among the Liverpool fans.
I think a lot of times as well, when it comes to breakers ripping stuff early, because you don't see it, like this is not.
But you're talking about big breakers just nonchalantly being like, "I'm pristine," and like there just seems to be no, it's lawless.
Well, I think there is a difference between having the product in hand and saying the spots are live, we're breaking it on release day, and actually physically breaking it early.
Yeah, both of which have happened.
The first one, I think, is fine. But the reason the first one is kind of problematic now is because the second one still happens. In a world where nobody ever breaks it before release day, then it's no problem. It's like you can be trusted to have it. Yeah. But when someone, you know, as the kids say, lets the intrusive thoughts win and cracks into it, that doesn't look good for anyone. It frustrates everyone.
But I do think also people do get upset that if someone's breaking it on release day, but they've bought it on the website and they don't have it yet, they'd be fuming. But at the same time, there is obviously people are buying bigger volumes, so they get it early. It makes sense. There's benefits and this, that, and the other. But yeah, I think right now there's no real uniform structure. And it's obviously hard because you're talking about USA, you're talking about Asia, you're talking about UK, Europe.
Yeah.
It is tough, but it's also not impossible. You see it with, you know, cinema releases. You see it with game releases. They're able to have a universal release date.
Although in many cases they have in movies, they have different release dates.
Because of time zones and stuff, or just because...
Just because of they just like films release here 2 or 3 months after they release in the US.
Mm-hmm.
But
obviously in this case you're talking about
you can't go to an American cinema. It's a universe.
It's like the yes to that, but also like you can hit a 1-on-1 in America 2 months before I have it in Europe. It's the same product as now been impacted. Exactly. If it's a universal product, there should be a universal release date. There you go.
Which is why the release dates are different for cinema-released films, but the same for streaming-released films.
There you go, Jason.
So there you are. All right.
Let's go.
We will be back on Monday for episode 220 of Soccer Cards United. In the meantime, have a lovely weekend, everyone. I hope we answered your questions to some level of satisfaction. If you missed out on this Q&A, you should have written in faster.
Yeah, that's true.
So enjoy the rest of your week. And Enzo, I will talk to you on Monday.
Jason, talk to you Monday.